Chapter 5 The Great Command. As we again looked upon the outer world, it was almost as if we had returned from another planet. We went down the trail to where the auto was waiting, and with a joy singing in our hearts that was unspeakable. We drove back and reached the Rayburn Ranch at 3:30 that afternoon. I could not help but wonder several times while at the ranch how it was possible for Rayburn to be engaged in such a line of business and still be privileged to have the marvelous experiences we had witnessed while at the Cave of Symbols. In response to the question in my mind, Saint Germain had explained, "While it is a very unusual thing to find one who is so nearly ready to be raised, occupied in these lower activities of the outer world, yet it does happen occasionally, very rarely of course, that an individual who has had a former growth does become entangled, so to speak, in some such outer effort through business associations of the personality. In these unusual cases, the ascended masters do give assistance by instructing them in the use of the consuming flame, which enables the individual to consume a great deal of the human creation previously generated. This they must use of their own choice. In this way, such an emergency can be taken care of and the plan of many lives fulfilled. We do not give sanction, however, to such avenues of work as the proper course for personal business activities. We do not want any misunderstanding about these conditions which the human side of mankind generate. For the raising of animals to kill for food is wrong from the beginning to end. But once in a while a soul of very great growth becomes enmeshed in some such activity through the suggestions and general conditions of the outer world. When this happens, the great divine law, through the wisdom of the ascended masters, provides a way to help the individual who reaches forth for his full attainment and wants to be free. At 7 o'clock on the morning of the 9th, we were to drive back to the mine. The day was unusually beautiful, and Nada's father suggested we go by way of a high pass through the mountains, where we could see one of the most beautiful views of the entire West. Far to the northwest stood the Grand Teton, in the midst of a most rugged, beautiful scenic belt that is incomparable. To the south lay Pike's Peak, to the southeast Long's Peak, and a host of others reaching skyward. I shall never forget it. Passing on down the mountain, we looked upon a perfect panorama of exquisite beauty. At 7 o'clock we drove into the camp at the mine, but no one felt in the least tired. We sounded the horn, and in a few moments Bob came running out to us at full speed. This time he seemed to have forgotten Pearl and rushed straight up to Nada. She stood very still as though not recognizing him at first. He stopped, turned deathly white. Then Nada, with her sweetest smile, held her arms out to him. But it was some moments before he could speak. "Darling," he said, "you gave me a terrible shock. And for a moment I felt my experience in the Cave of Symbols was only a dream. Now I know it was not." "No, love," said Nada. "It was very real, praise God, and I am deeply grateful. We shall both be grateful forever." Then, as Bob looked up, he seemed to realize there were others present. "My dear, forgive me," he said, taking Pearl in his arms. "You know I would not neglect you." "Beloved brother," she replied, "I quite understand. It is all right." Bob gave each of us a bear hug, even to Daniel Rayburn. "Bob," said Rayburn, "it does my heart good to see you so natural and loving. Come to dinner with us tonight. From now on, you are one of the family. Always dine with us instead of at the camp." That evening at dinner, Bob related his experience at the Cave of Symbols, for he had retained every detail of it, and was perfectly fascinated by Nada's mother. It was very apparent that through it a great attunement had taken place. Then we discussed the work in the Master Discovery. "It is amazingly rich," he remarked. We must have taken out over $300,000 in value already. We were about to leave the table when a piece of paper floated down in front of Daniel Rayburn. On it were the words, "May I have the privilege of dining with you tomorrow evening, and of supplying the food from the universal substance? I might suggest that you allow your housekeeper a vacation for the evening." It was signed Saint Germain. This idea was something quite new to Bob, and for a few moments he was very much perplexed. "Do you mean to tell me," he said, "that the master will provide the dinner from the invisible?"
"Precisely that, Bob," replied Mr. Rayburn.
"However, you will have ample opportunity to observe all that takes place, for a new world is opening to you." Then the table was cleared, and we held a regular business conference. "In all my life, Mr. Rayburn," Bob began, "I have never seen such marvelous harmony among mining men, or such love and respect sent by everyone to the owner. I know it must be due to this master."
"The new assistant, Dave Sutherland, has arrived, and I would like to have you meet him in the morning. He was a classmate of mine at the School of Mines in Colorado, and graduated a year after I did, with high honors." "Better have him come now," Rayburn said. Bob phoned, and in about half an hour there entered a fine-looking young chap, at least 6'2", well-built, with a frank, open countenance that would win the heart of anyone. He was a man of high honor, sterling ideals, and one felt he could be absolutely trusted at all times. The next morning, Rex and I went with Bob to the office and found Dave already there. He seemed very grateful and appreciative for his opportunity to be with Bob and Rayburn. "Gee, I never dreamed I would get so near to heaven," he said with frank enthusiasm. "Dave," Bob answered, "you don't know how near heaven you really are." At 5:45, we gathered in the living room and had been there about 1/4 hour when someone tapped very gently on the door. When Rex opened it, Saint Germain stood before him in a beautiful white flannel suit, a perfectly groomed gentleman of the modern world. "I thought I would give you a little surprise," he said, greeting us all with his loving, gracious smile. "Well, Bob," he said, looking at him quizzically, "why don't you do it?" Bob seemed confused for a moment, and coming up, threw his arms around the master and gave him a big hug. "My beloved brother," he went on, "the first step to perfection is to be natural, for all things are right when the motive is divine." Bob saw at once that Saint Germain knew his inmost thoughts. "Now, if we may all take our places at your table, we shall dine. The linen and entire service required tonight will be permanent, and will be presented to Pearl and Rex as a gift from one who loves them very much." Daniel Rayburn seated our beloved Saint Germain at the head of the table, Nada at his right, and then Bob, Pearl, Rex, and myself at his left, he taking the other end of the table. All bowed their heads in silence as the master gave praise and thanks for an abundance of everything they required. As we raised our heads, the most exquisite white cloth covered the table, with napkins for each. In the center was a beautifully carved jade vase, filled with roses, some of them buds just opening, and their wonderful fragrance filling the entire room. A crystal goblet containing a golden liquid appeared at each place. Saint Germain raised his glass and gave a toast in which we all joined. "To the full illumination, glory, and perfection of each one of you and of all mankind." Bob drained his glass rapidly, and as the essence rushed through his body like lightning, the expression on his face revealed his surprise. Next came the plates, cups, saucers, and other dishes of the most exquisite china we had ever seen. It was like the substance of pearls, with embossed golden leaves of wonderful design. The knives, forks, and spoons were made of a rare white metal with carved crystal handles. On the plate of each appeared what looked like an individual meat loaf, but when we tasted it, there was no meat in it. This loaf, Saint Germain explained, contains a combination of substance not yet known upon earth. You see, there is a definite reason why we never eat meat, and why human beings should not eat it either. This is because the atoms of which it is composed are the condensation into the substance of this world of mankind's own vicious thoughts and feelings of the past. Animals were not in existence upon this planet during the first two golden ages. They only began to appear after humanity had generated the discord that followed those first two periods. The first creation described in Genesis referred to these two golden ages, and they were described as very good. Then the mist arose, and the so-called fall of man came about by the attention of the intellect becoming focused upon the appetites of the body through the feeling. Thus the outer mind became more and more enmeshed in the world of things, and hence forgot the source and powerhouse of its being, which is the mighty I Am Presence. The plan of completeness, or divine way of life, was lost sight of, and more discord has continued to creep into the feelings of humanity ever since. As long as human beings insist on killing animals, they will never be able to break the vicious habits within their feelings by which they have bound themselves, are constantly destroying their own bodies, and shutting out the finer mental impulses. The love of mankind for domestic animals is raising and purifying some of that past creation, and releasing that stream of life into a more harmonious phase of existence. As humanity becomes more harmonious and pure, all animals will disappear from the earth. Even the weeds and blight upon plant life will be removed, and the earth once again returned to her pristine purity described as the Garden of Eden, meaning obedience to the divine wisdom. The great harm of meat-eating is that the flesh of the animal records the feeling of fear it experiences when killed. The animal has an emotional body, and the vibration of fear recorded previous to and at the moment of death qualifies the flesh, and that quality is absorbed by the emotional body of the human being who eats it. It also causes a certain substance to condense into the brain, which dulls the intellect and prevents the finer impulses from flowing into it from the mighty I Am Presence. This substance even an ascended master will not interfere with, because the individual does these things of his own free will. Fear, in its many subtle phases, is the predominant feeling within mankind today, and is the wide open door through which the sinister force holds its control in the personality and does its destructive work. The teaching that it is necessary to eat meat in order to obtain strength is vicious and entirely untrue. For the elephant, one of the strongest creatures on our earth, is a non-meat-eating animal. The idea that serums made from animals can produce health and perfection or protection against disease in a clean child's body or that of an adult is another consciously directed activity of the sinister force in this world, in order to break down the health and resistance in the race, that the destructive feelings may hold sway and destroy the ideals of mankind. The medical profession has been unknowingly made a cat's paw for this destruction under the guise of science. It is only because of the persistent stubbornness in the sense appetites, which are feelings in the human body, that the race keeps using its marvelous mental capacity and the wonderful, pure energy from the mighty I Am Presence to create more and more destruction. When human beings will spend the same amount of time and energy studying perfection and the wonderful miracles of creation that face us everywhere, as they do now in gratifying the physical appetites and whims of the personal self, they too will produce the same miracles that the ascended masters are able to do. However, before 50 years are past, mankind will look back upon the meat-eating habit of today as we now look upon cannibalism. There are several things that leave a substance in the brain which must be cleared away if the full perfection from the mighty I Am Presence is to be released through the personal consciousness. These are, in the order of their importance, narcotics, alcohol, meat, tobacco, excess sugar, salt, and strong coffee. Now, we come to the remedy for these things. For I will never point your attention to any consideration of imperfection without showing you the way to transcend it and replace it by perfection brought about harmoniously. I want you to realize always that whatever needs to be changed in the physical experience, if you will call your mighty I Am Presence into action through your mind and body, the result will always be produced without suffering or discord of any kind. The way of perfection, which is the activity of the I Am Presence, never demands of the personal self anything but the letting go of its chains, its discords, its limitations, and its sufferings. And this change is always brought about harmoniously and through divine love. The way to purify the brain and body structure, if the personality has been putting these substances into the physical body in the past, is to call to your mighty I Am Presence to pour through your mind and body its violet consuming flame, using the following affirmation. Mighty I Am Presence, blaze through me thy consuming flame of divine love. Take this desire out of me, annihilate its cause and effect, past, present, and future, and replace it by the fullness of yourself, your perfect satisfaction, and hold your full dominion here forever. This same affirmation can be used for another with the same miraculous and permanent accomplishment. Then spend a few moments, at least 3 times a day, visualizing yourself standing within a pillar of violet flame, rushing from the feet to some distance above the head and extending for at least 3 feet on each side of around the body. Hold this picture as long as you can comfortably do so and feel the flame, which is the purifying power of divine love, penetrating every cell of your body. This dissolves all impure and unnecessary substances in the cells of the body, thus clearing and illumining the consciousness. This is part of the knowledge of the sacred fire, which has only been taught in the retreats of the great white brotherhood throughout the centuries. It is the way the ascended masters purify, heal, and harmonize mankind and the very earth itself. It is the power by which so-called miracles are performed. It can never have any other effect in either the brain, body, or affairs, but great ease, comfort, peace, and eternal good. In my reference to the animal creation of this world, I wish you to understand that the birds were originally created by the ascended masters as messengers for the use of humanity. What destructive qualities they sometimes express are due to the radiation of discord from human beings. As the new age comes in, these qualities will disappear. Nature, and by that I mean the plant and mineral life of this earth, is created and brought forth by the great cosmic masters who design and direct the creation of a planet at cosmic levels. Nature within herself is forever pure. And if humanity did not impose its own discord and impurity upon the very atmosphere in which plant life grows, there could not be poisonous weeds or plants in existence. There was a time upon this earth when everything in nature affected the minds and bodies of human beings harmoniously. Within nature is a self-purifying, self-protecting, immortal activity, which tolerates only for a time man's vicious genius for destruction. Cataclysmic disaster is her method of self-defense in returning to man that which he has imposed upon her in the centuries past. Thus, through life after life, man continually meets his own creation, turned upon himself, until he builds his universe according to the pattern of divine perfection, which is the true expression of his own divinity. Age after age, nature is continually throwing back upon man, through cataclysmic action, his own iniquity. And she is stronger than any opponent, because she is a direct creation and outpouring of the ascended masters. In this way, man's own discord destroys and buries himself and nature in her pristine purity, goes on serenely expressing her immortality. Notice the many civilizations that have been built upon this earth, and the fact that nature has so completely obliterated all traces of man's work in them, until only in tradition and myth is there the faintest record of some of these activities. Man, if he have attained wisdom, which is the constructive use of all knowledge, may have the perfect cooperation of nature's gigantic forces, and through them make his accomplishments immortal also. He must stop the stupendous slaughter of animals for food and the business of raising them to kill. A few moments after we began our dinner, a tiny loaf of bread appeared in front of each one, Nada's and Bob's coming together, and Pearl's and Rex's also. This was followed by a delicious vegetable salad entirely different from anything we had ever tasted. For dessert, there was a most wonderful fruit whip made of a combination of peaches, plums, and other fruits unknown to us. Blended into this was something resembling whipped cream, but sparkling like frost, just deliciously cool, another unfamiliar delicacy. "Now," said Saint Germain, "you shall have something which I feel sure you will prefer even to coffee." As he spoke, an exquisite container appeared before him, filled with an amber liquid, steaming hot. Cup after cup arose from the table, passing to him, being filled, and then returned, as if held by invisible hands, until all were served. "This," he said, "does not require cream, and please do not be alarmed by the sensation of the first taste. It is not intoxicating, but is one of the most nourishing of beverages." We sipped it very slowly, and felt a thrill as of an electric current rush through our bodies like living light. It was most delicious. The service for each course disappeared as soon as we were finished and before the succeeding one arrived. At the close of the dinner, Bob could not restrain himself any longer and burst forth, "I have never been so amazed and happy in all my life. To think that we are living in the very midst of these marvels all the time, and yet to be so unaware of it, is almost unbelievable. The possibility that one may attain this understanding and have such limitless use of God's energy and substance to produce everything we require, as has been done here tonight, thrills me through and through. I want to understand the use of this great law more than anything in the world. I am willing to try to do whatever is necessary to attain it. Will you, beloved master," he exclaimed, turning to Saint Germain, "help me?" "My beloved brother," he replied, "you have just spoken from the great inner self. It is the I Am within you, and its great wisdom and power you shall learn to use when you do accept this magic presence in its fullness. Then you will do these same things as easily as you have seen me do them here tonight. Remember, in regard to this, that the ascended masters never use darkened rooms in which to produce that which they create direct from the universal substance. Whatever cannot stand the light is not of the Christ, and should be instantly dismissed. Let no one who serves the light ever sit in darkened rooms trying to produce phenomena. That which is of the light always works in the light, and whatever cannot stand it certainly does not serve the constructive path or the way of perfection. All that requires darkened places to produce its phenomena is of the psychic plane, and will sooner or later ensnare those who try it in the net of misery and destruction which exists there. If you will follow the instruction that will be given from time to time, you will have reason to rejoice throughout eternity. I shall now keep my promise to you," he continued, turning to Rex and Pearl. And in just a moment all the service that had been used during the dinner reappeared upon the table as if placed there by invisible hands. "We do all our cleansing," he replied, "by the use of currents of energy, a means that many will also use in the new age we have entered. This delicate-looking china and crystal service which I present to you is unbreakable, With this remark, a glass and plate fell to the floor without being damaged in the least. "The tablecloth and napkins will never soil or wear out," he went on. "But never allow anyone to care for them but yourselves. Now I wish to have your attention further, only because this is a double union of two sets of God's twin rays, may I produce for your instruction that which will follow." Holding out his hands, in just a moment, a disc of gold about the size of a $20 gold piece appeared in each one. "Gold will always respond," he remarked, "to your call, if you understand the great law governing its production. I wish you to examine this carefully," he commented, as he passed the pieces around the table for each of us to look at closely. We handed them back, and he went on, "Look again." Immediately a perfect blue-white diamond formed in each palm, which he offered for our examination. And then, taking a piece of gold and a diamond in each hand, he closed his fingers and waited a few moments. When he opened them, a beautiful diamond ring lay in each hand. He handed one to Bob and the other to Rex, saying, "My love to you. Wear them always. Please observe again." Here he held out his hands, and in a few moments there appeared, as though suspended in the air, a pearl necklace above his left hand and a diamond one above the right. Gently they settled down into his palms, and he continued, "These are of equal value, and in the commercial world would bring a fortune. I present them to my beloved students, Pearl and Nada, with a far greater purpose than that of any monetary value." He handed the pearl necklace to Pearl and the diamond one to Nada with his blessing, "My love to you. Wear them always. Now your consciousness is anchored, so I can give you the great command. With it you can command the body to manifest perfection, having dominion and use of certain elements, currents of electronic force, rays of light. Thus you can govern your life and affairs in perfect divine order. This is strictly private instruction to you while here in this retreat, and is never to be given to anyone except by me." He proceeded to explain the tremendous use of the great command, for its simplicity is so wonderful and its power so stupendous. He then took each one separately and asked us to give the command and to realize fully how impossible it was for anything to result from it but the greatest possible harmony and blessing to everyone. Each of us had instantaneous results, and we were almost speechless before the enormity of its power. We took a vow before the mighty God Self in each that we would never use it except in the service of divine love. You have all heard the phrase often, "With God all things are possible." I tell you that you can so perfect yourselves, so raise your consciousness into the pure essence of God, that all things with you are possible, as soon as you learn to direct this gigantic power by the love and wisdom of your own mighty I Am Presence. The mighty magic I Am Presence within you is supreme and victorious over everything in heaven and on earth. Place it first always, and contemplate this mighty truth whenever you have a quiet moment. It was now 9 o'clock, and it had grown very dark out of doors, yet no one was aware that the light within had steadily increased, as the light outside grew less. No one thought of turning on the lights, as Saint Germain had illumined the room by his control of the electronic force. "I want each of you," he continued, "to so train yourself that you are never surprised at my appearance. I may come at any time, anywhere, when it is necessary to give assistance." Here he looked directly at Bob. "No, Bob," he said. "A student is never given anything by us that he is not ready to receive. An ascended master makes no mistakes, of that I can assure you. In regard to those who are sometimes called masters, I wish to give an explanation that is of very grave importance to the students of light and truth. In the first place, there are those called masters some of whom have attained a very high degree of wisdom and maintained life in the physical body for nearly 2 centuries, yet have not raised the body as Jesus did. There are also many who call themselves masters who have not the faintest concept of what a real master is. Of one thing you can be absolutely and eternally certain, that no one who is a real master will ever say so, and that an ascended master never accepts payment of any kind for the help he gives, because the first qualification of true mastership is to do all as his glad free gift of his service of love to the world. The ascended master is absolutely infallible at all times because he has passed out of the octave of vibratory action in which mistakes can occur, for he has become wholly divine. By the raising of his body, all atomic structure has been changed into the electronic. He sees with limitless vision and knows all because he uses only the all-knowing mind of God. Those masters who have attained even a very great degree of wisdom but have not yet raised the atomic body can and sometimes do color what they give out by their own personal concept. For no one becomes infallible until he functions in his electronic body or the body of pure light, where no contamination or personal concept can exist. Bob, you are quite worthy of all you have been privileged to experience. Ever strive to make yourself more worthy of the mighty I Am presence that beats your heart and gives you the use of every good thing. I wish to suggest that Nada, Pearl, and Rex return to school, and that this good brother indicating me remain at the ranch with their father until their graduation and his ascension. After that, the 5 of you may always consider the Diamond K Ranch your home. Your activity, after 3 more years, will be such that the world will be your home, for you will be required to serve wherever your assistance is required. 1 year from the 10th of the coming September, I wish Nada, Pearl, Rex, and Bob to accompany me to the Far East, India, and Arabia, and to remain there for 2 years. Bob, it will be well to prepare Dave Sutherland in the meantime to take full charge of the mine during your absence. As to our plans, please be absolutely silent. I will meet with you all once more at the ranch just before the young folks leave for the university. And I wish you, Bob, to make arrangements to be there also. I will let you know the exact date later. Your great love and natural sincerity has opened wide the door of illumination. Be ever faithful to the great light within, the glorious I Am presence. Always ask and then listen for your inner guidance. It will and must come clearly, definitely, and correctly. I rejoice to have been the guest of such noble, faithful friends. My love and blessings shall always be with you. Good night. As he spoke these words, the dazzling illumination of the bungalow faded out. Rex stepped across the room and turned on the lights. Saint Germain had gone. We returned to the dining room, and before us upon the table stood all the marvelous crystal, china, linen, and silver. These people, who are still my beloved friends, have these beautiful gifts in their possession today. Oh, the glory of this night! It shall stay with me forever! Exclaimed Bob in his natural enthusiasm. It transcends anything of which I have ever heard or dreamed, and it is real, true, and attainable for each of us. I am so grateful that these 2 great streams of happiness should come to me at once, Nada, and this great revelation of perfection and power, to have the gift of the highest love possible, and the glory of my twin ray in one who has this marvelous true understanding is a miracle to me and a thing I have been craving all my life. The happiness of having found the mighty I Am presence within myself is beyond words, and when I think of the assistance from our beloved Saint Germain and my financial freedom through you, my blessed friends, my gratitude is endless. My cup of happiness is surely full to overflowing. I feel as though I could flood the world with that mighty inner love which I see so clearly is the great solvent for all things. The first thing we heard next morning was Bob saying, "Oh, joy, I still have it." I asked, "What?" "My ring," he answered, and that started the day joyously for us all. Rex packed the wonderful gifts of Saint Germain and placed them in the car. When we were ready to return to the ranch, on the morning of the 15th, great tears filled Bob's eyes as he held each of us to his heart in wonderful gratitude for all his happiness. When he came to Nada, his strength almost failed. But as he looked up, he saw the face of our beloved master, and instantly he was sustained. With a wonderful smile, he assisted each of us into the car and waved goodbye. We reached the ranch the following day. When Rayburn awakened Saturday morning, he found a message from Saint Germain asking all of us to meet him in the tower room at 8 o'clock that evening and informing us that he had invited Bob to come also. At 8:20, we went to the tower room, and as we approached it, the door suddenly opened. There stood our beloved master in his seamless white robe, every line of his being expressing the majesty and dominion of love. The rest of us wore the robes we had been given in the Cave of Symbols, except Bob, who had not yet received his. Saint Germain's radiance enfolded each one as he greeted us. "I see you are prompt and faithful in all things," he said, handing Bob his robe as he stepped toward him, and then continued, "Accept this with my blessing." Bob returned in a moment, looking like a being from another world. He radiated such grace and power, and we took our accustomed places. Let each one focus his consciousness upon the light within the heart from the mighty I Am Presence. In a few moments we opened our eyes and could both see and hear within the world of the Ascended Master through the raising of our consciousness during the meditation. Each one could clearly see his own mighty I Am Presence smiling down upon him serenely. This made us realize deeply what we could become as we hold steadfastly to the acknowledgement and acceptance of the magic presence and the use of its limitless wisdom and power. This is the only presence in the universe which can raise the human side of us and draw us into itself. Thus by its love, light, and power do we become wholly perfect. Surely there can be no greater incentive to mankind than to reach with all its strength, determination, and devotion to this mighty I Am Presence, that we may be raised above limitation of every kind. Then shall we be enabled to live as was originally intended, and render service that is truly divine. The opportunity to see even for a few moments our own electronic body is a blessing and privilege that cannot be overestimated, for it gives us strength and encouragement, drawing us like a magnet until at last we enter the Holy of Holies and become one with the source from which we sprang. After a few moments of contemplating that mighty I Am Presence, Saint Germain lowered the vibratory action until most of that higher consciousness faded from our sight. "Do you not see, my dear ones," he explained, "how easy it is to consciously lift your consciousness until it expands and encompasses everything you can possibly desire to know? This is the method I wish you to use, and by so doing raise your awareness to where you do actually comprehend the great law and attain its complete use and operation. Do you not see how you can utilize and direct this mighty energy without limit? But you will soon be doing it quite easily yourselves. I have shown you the individualized I Am Presence of each one.
that you may understand what a small fragment of your own God-given dominion you are using in your physical experience. This glorious presence is ever urging you to arise. Receive your crown of glory and wield your scepter of complete dominion over its vast domains, and be free forever from every limitation. This transcendent I Am Presence, which you have just seen, is your own real master, the pure Christ Self. It is all majesty and mastery, in full eternal dominion over all worlds, over all created things. I have a few directions to give before I leave you tonight. It is my wish that Nada, Pearl, Bob, and Rex meet the rest of us in Washington, D.C. for the holidays, between Christmas and New Year. Your father and this good brother indicating me will be there a few weeks ahead of you for work we have to do. Alexander Gaylord, your father's friend, will visit you here tomorrow. Remember, as you return into the association of the outer world, that the only true service is to understand and use in perfect divine order the mighty energy of God within and about you. To consciously direct this perfectly is the only important activity of your lives. All else is secondary. Again, I enfold you in the eternal light of love, peace, and complete illumination with my sincere blessings. With these parting words, the body of our beloved Saint Germain steadily entered into that higher vibratory octave and disappeared.